Blog Talk Radio.
Wait a minute. Who's driving? Oh, it must be me. Good evening. Welcome.
You better be. I'm in the back seat.
I'm in the trunk like a good Italian should be. Good evening and welcome. Yeah, we're going to get calls on that. Welcome to Erie House, Oldie Timey Radio, number 380-something. 88, I think. Car trouble tonight. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Jay Binkley from Wayne This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. Of course, we have Goat here, fresh from the farm. And I don't mean Bob Evans.
And unfortunately, that's the only goat. Yeah. Just, why? Is Bob Evans serving goat? Anyway.
He's not down on that farm anymore, you know?
We're garless, once again, it appears. For the nonce.
Well, for the moment.
For the nonce. Well, we do have three wonderful tales of automotive stuff. Car trouble, if you will.
We do. Yep, all kinds of car trouble coming up tonight. And tonight and tomorrow
five
both.
Coming up this weekend.
Two of them. One tonight, one tomorrow.
Yep.
One
we also got...
A really, yeah, go ahead.
So what, Theater 5 is what, sci-fi-ish, maybe?
Not really, no. These two particular episodes are not. So okay. Theater 5, that was all kinds of different stories. They had some sci-fi, they had some mystery, they had some murder-type stories. They had a couple that were on the funny side. It was in many ways a lot like the Mystery Theater, where there's a lot of mystery, but there's also some sci-fi, and there's also a few funny ones. Like in Mystery Theater, we had Fred Gwynne doing Peter Pumpkin Eater. That's a very fun one. If you haven't heard that, go back into the archives. It's there to listen to. It is a really fun episode of the Mystery Theater about a daydreamer in Peter Pumpkin Eater.
Ah, yes. And not only that, Theater 5, we got suspense. Well, suspense is suspense, you know. And a little bit of comedy with the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show tonight. All about cars.
What?
And more importantly,
yep.
What we got, Dave, is Fogbane, good old Bob, and GGSI
yes.
Paper in the chat live with us right now. Hi, hello, ugga bugga boo.
Good to see the GGSI Papers back once again. They're live. I know that they listen to us in the archive, but it's great to see them here live in the archive as well.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be live in the chat.
Live is more fun. It is for me, at least. I feed off of you people. I feed.
I didn't know you were that hungry, Dale. You know, no wonder you have trouble with your sugar counts.
That's right. Anything that's not moving, it's fair game. And sometimes things are moving a little. We got some great radio. Cars are...
You know where I'd like to start tonight, Dale? You know where I'd like to start? I think
where would you like?
One, you should always start with fun. But this show, Phil Harris Alice Show, was just so utterly ridiculous. And it couldn't be done on television. They shot a pilot. Episode 4 television, and a lot of shows transferred fairly nicely, but it never, no network would buy it, as funny as it was, because it never could compare to the crazy things like tonight is going to happen in the episode. You couldn't do that on television. You might be able to figure that out today, but in the mid-1950s, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, nor was there a budget for it. I would imagine, considering the title of it is The Cadillac in the Swimming Pool.
Yes. I just love Phil Harris. The chemistry between Phil Harris and Elliot Lewis is just – and if it weren't for this, I think of Elliot Lewis as a dramatic actor and a producer, which he was. He was a show creator. He was a producer. He was a dramatic actor. But he will always be remembered in my mind as Frankie Remley here on the Phil Harris Alice Fun Show. And then you have Walter Tetley. Yep. Then you got the great Walter Tetley coming in as Ambrosio, Julius Ambrosio, who's also played Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve. But, man, was he such a stinker in this show. It just such great characters they built.
Well, we might as well get to it, Dave. You whet our appetite. Let's get into the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, originally broadcast.
Episode number 103 comes to us from May 15th of 1949.
Good health to all from Rexall. Yes, it's Sunday, time for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists.
Good evening. This is your Rexall family druggist, taking a little time from behind the prescription counter this Sunday evening to speak for all 10,000 of us. The 10,000 independent druggists who have added the word Rexall to our own store names. You can always tell us by the orange and blue Rexall sign on our windows. The sign means that we carry the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. They range all the way from aspirin to penicillin, and they're as fine and pure and dependable as science can make them. We independent druggists recommend them to our customers because we know you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. Mr. Scott of the Rexall Company is having a lawn party at his home this afternoon. Many distinguished persons have been invited, and as we look in, we find Mr. and Mrs. Scott going over their guest list.
Grace, let's check the guest list once more and make sure that all the important people have been invited.
Very well, dear. This is the list. Mr. and Mrs. Phil Harris, Mr. Frank Remley.
No, dear. Not the names I crossed out. Just read the ones we invited.
Darling, I already invited the Harrises. I think she's a charming woman.
So do I. It's that Tennessee boll weevil I object to. Must we have him?
Well, I think we should. After all, he's the star of your radio program, and you're the one who hired him.
I know. I know.
You signed him for 2 years, and he still has another year to go.
Stop pouring salt on my wound. Ever since Harris has been on the air for Rexall, I've been a nervous wreck. I've got pains all over. My right arm is muscle-bound.
Darling, I don't follow you. What's Phil Harris got to do with your arm being muscle-bound?
I'll explain. Because of me, Phil Harris is on the air every Sunday night.
So
every Monday morning, I have to write letters to 10,000 independent druggists apologizing. Grace, please tell me you didn't invite that Frank Remley character.
Well, I called him at his office, but I couldn't reach him.
His office?
Yes, dear. Mr. Harris gave me the number, but Mr. Remley was too busy to talk to me.
Remley was too busy to talk to you?
Yes, he was watching a television show, and the bartender wouldn't disturb him.
Well, thank goodness you couldn't reach him. Without Remley, I can stand Harris for an hour or so.
I'm afraid you'll have to tolerate him a little longer than that. Mrs. Harris is lending us some garden chairs, and he's bringing them over this morning. I told him he might as well stay on for the party.
Oh, goody. A whole day with old Wavy Wig.
Phil, will you please hurry up? We have to get those chairs over to the Scotch this morning.
All right, honey. Wait till I finish my milk. I've only got about 3 fingers left to drink.
Phil, do you suppose the Scots invited us just because they needed chairs?
Oh, don't be silly. We were probably the first ones on their guest list.
Daddy, can we go to this party?
No, I'm sorry, kids, but this is just for grown-ups. You see, they're going to have a lot of important people there.
Daddy, are you important?
Am I important? Alice, you got to have a talk with this child. She's got to be straightened out on a few things. Tell her how important I am. Go on, tell her all the things that make me important.
No, you'd better tell her. You've got them memorized. Who else has been invited to the Scotch party, Phil?
I don't know, but you can bet that only the best people in town are going to be there.
Oh, you weren't invited, eh, Philip?
Well, looky, 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 here comes Schnucky. For your information, I was invited, Willie. I got a resvip.
A resvip?
Yes, RSVP, resvip. Scotty insisted that Alice and me come to the party.
He insisted, indeed. He wanted Alice, and he felt that he was forced to ask you. He's probably hoping that you won't show up.
William, why are you always so terse with me? I've done nothing to warrant your caustic diatribe.
Phil, what was that?
Just a little something Ronald Coleman laid on me.
Anyway, Phil, was Frankie invited?
No, he wasn't, honey, and I can't understand why.
Well, Mr. Scott didn't invite Francis because he doesn't want him, and I hope he has sense enough to stay away.
Well, don't worry about Remley. He don't go to parties where he's not wanted. He's a very sensitive guy. And he never... Come in. Ah, oh, hello, Frankie.
Hiya, Curly. How do you like this new suit I bought for Scott's party? Hi, Alice.
Well, if it isn't little old sensitive Frankie.
Hey, Remley, I'm glad you're going. Scott sent you an invitation, huh?
No. What time are we supposed to be at the party?
Francis. Surely you're not serious about going to the party.
Why not?
Mr. Scott didn't ask you because he doesn't like you.
Well, I don't like him either, but I'm not going to be petty about it.
Now, wait a minute, Frankie. You can't go someplace where you're not wanted.
Now, look, why don't we do this, Phil? Let Frankie come with us when we take the chairs to Mr. Scott. And when he sees Frankie, he'll probably invite him, and everything will be all right. And if Mr. Scott doesn't want him, he can always leave.
Sure, we'll never miss the old sourpuss. Hey, we ought to have a great time at this party.
Sure we will. Hey, do you think they might ask me to sing?
If they're smart, they won't.
Now, just a moment, Mr. Remley. I'm tired of having you make fun of my voice. I can sing, and I'm going to show you.
Oh, Phil, not now. We have to get the chairs over.
They can wait. I'm going to prove once and for all that I have a great voice. And I'm going to prove it right now.
Go ahead. When you get through singing, call me. I'll be inside listening to the frost warnings.
Young Johnny Jones, he had a cute little boat. And all the girlies he would take for a float. He had girlies on the shore. Cute little peaches by the score. But Johnny was a Weisenheimer, you know. His steady girl was Flo. And every Sunday afternoon, she'd jump in his boat and they would spoon. And then he'd row, row, row. Way up that river he would row, row, row. A hug he'd give her, then he'd kiss her now and then. She would tell him when they'd fool around, and then they'd kiss again, and then they'd row, row, row. Way up that river they would row, oh, 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 oh. Then he'd drop both his oars, take a few more encores, and then they'd row, row, row. In Johnny's boat he had a cute little seat, and all the kisses that he stole were so sweet. And he knew just how to row. He was a rowing Romeo. He had an island where the trees were so grand. He knew just where to land. Then tales of love he'd tell to Flo, until it was time for them to go. And then he'd row, row, row. Right up that river he would row so slow. A hug he'd give her then, he'd kiss her now and then. She would tell him when. He'd fool around and fool around, and he'd kiss again and then. Way up that river he would row, just he and Flo. With her head on his chest, he'd take a few measures rest, and then he'd row, 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 just he and Florence. Row, row, row right into heaven. Row, row, he had no Johnson Motors, so Johnny and Flo would row, row, row.
How'd you like that, Frankie? It's
pretty cold in Pomona.
Ah, what do you know? How'd you like it, Alice?
They're firing the smudge pots in Redlands. Oh, come on, Phil. You and Frankie put the chairs in the car and we'll get over to the Scots, huh? Phil, Mrs. Scott's car is in the driveway, so you'd better park out front here.
Okay,
huh?
I'll park right here. All right, come on, Frankie. Give me a hand with these chairs.
Oh,
I don't...
hello there.
Oh, hiya, Chief.
Hello, Mr. Scott.
It's good to see you. I must say you look charming. You know, you get younger and prettier every day. How do you do it?
I owe it all to clean living.
Yes.
Someday I might make my secret of eternal youth available to the public.
Oh, what a magnanimous gesture. Mrs. Harris, I'm glad you and your man of tomorrow could come over early.
Well, as long as I'm here early, I'll go in and see if I can help Mrs. Scott.
Oh,
huh?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Harris, can I help you take the chairs out of the car?
No, I brought someone along to help me.
Yeah, I'm here, Scotty.
Oh. I guess we all have days when we should have stood in bed.
I hear you're having a party today, Scotty. I said I hear you're having a party today.
Maybe if I don't answer, you'll go away.
I didn't get an invitation in the mail. Could it be because it was misaddressed? Or maybe you didn't put a stamp on it. I can't imagine why I didn't get it.
Could it be because I didn't send you one?
You and your wild guesses.
Mr. Scott, I brought Frankie along because I knew you'd want him here. After all, what would a party be like without Francis?
I don't know, but we're going to find out.
Mr. Scott, let's not beat around the bush. If you don't want me, say so.
I don't want you.
Let's go around the bush once more. There must be a solution to this problem.
There is. You can go home.
No, that don't appeal to me.
Remley, I'm warning you. If you insist on staying here, I'm leaving.
That's the most sensible suggestion you made yet.
Remley, if you don't get out of here, I'll call...
Now, wait a minute, fellas. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's not fight. Now, can't we settle this thing amicably? Mr. Scott, I think it would be nice if you, the boss, invited Frankie the employee to your social gathering. It would prove something.
What?
Well, it would show the world that labor and capital can travel hand in hand to an ultimate utopia.
Look,
our ideologies are different don't mean we can't live in the same world together.
But
let's foster brotherly love. The spirit of true Americanism is at stake here.
Yeah, remember the Maine. Yeah. And remember the Alamo.
Let's not forget what they fought for at Apaprata Pradamax. That this is the land of the free.
Where all men are created equal.
From every mountain side, let freedom.
Will you two stop this?
Oh, I can't stand any more of this. Harris, would you mind carrying the chairs down in back of the house? We're holding the garden party around the swimming pool.
Okay, Mr. Don't worry. We'll take care of everything.
Remley, as long as you insist on staying, you will have to excuse me. I have to go down the street to see somebody. Who? My lawyer. I want to know if I can get an injunction against you. Goodbye.
Good old Scotty. I knew he'd invite me.
Yeah.
Well, come on, Frankie. Let's carry these chairs down to the pool.
Okay.
Oop, I guess they're going to carry that on over to the pool, and they'll be right back with the second half of Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Yeah, they set up for the lunacy to begin. Let the lunacy begin.
As, they had to let Remley in. Oh, God.
Oh, I tell you what, this is I've got some favorite comedies. Amos and Andy has some great shows. Phil McGee and Molly and Phil Harris, I don't know, probably my top three comedies from the golden age of radio. Oh, and of course, Jack Benny. So.
Oh, those are great. It changed a bit over the years, but it just retained its greatness.
In 49, Phil Harris was also doing the Jack Benny. They were both with NBC and both on Sunday nights. So Phil would be running from the Jack Benny studio to his own show.
There's some fun.
So he wasn't always at the end of the Jack Benny show, and he wasn't always at the very opening of the, they'd have the commercial and the friendly druggist and things like that, your friendly neighborhood druggist, Rexall druggist and things like that, which would give him a good 5 minutes of his show. Plus, if he had another 5 minutes of Jack Benny's show, then he could, that's 10 minutes to get from one studio to the next. At least they were in the same building.
There you go.
When at one point Jack moved to CBS and Phil didn't, and that's when he did it for like 1 year, maybe two at the most. Then after that, that's when Bob Crosby came in to take over Phil's spot, because it just got to be too much to go from one building to another, from NBC to CBS where Jack was.
Yep. And Phil Harris, he went on to do other voice work. He did a novelty song, The Thing. He also was Baloo the Bear in the Jungle Book movie.
And he was the bear in Robin Hood, Disney thing. Roger Miller was the he was a rooster telling the story, wasn't he? Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think. Oh, and he was in the Aristocats.
Yes, he was.
He was one of the cats in Aristocats, yeah. So he did, he'll always be known as Blue Bear from doing his song, The Bear Necessities, there. Yep.
Yes, indeed. Well, looks like Timmy fell in the well. We'll get back to Cadillac in the swimming pool.
Well, come on, Frankie. Let's carry these chairs down to the pool.
Okay.
Hey, Curly, the pool's at the bottom of that steep hill. With all these chairs, we'll have to make a few trips. Why don't we just drive your car down?
That's a good idea. We can just... Yeah, but wait a minute. We'd have to move Scott's car out of the driveway.
I'll tell you, look, Remley, you drive his car down to the garage, and I'll go get mine.
Okay.
Hey, Curly, I can't drive Scott's car down. There's no key in it.
Remley, you don't need a key. It's on a hill. You can coast it down. Just release the handbrake.
Oh. There she goes, Curly. Now what do I do?
Oh, no, Remley, you were supposed to get in the car.
You just told me to release the handbrake. You didn't tell me to get in.
Well, look at the way it's rolling down. Remley, do something. Stop it.
Stop it, he said.
Hey, car!
Come back here!
Remley! Now, come on, we gotta try and catch it.
Hey, look, it's heading for the fence. That ought to stop it. It didn't. Cheap lumber, I guess.
Remley, it's heading for the pool.
Well, that ought to stop it. It can't possibly go any further. Told you that would stop it.
Right into the water.
Don't worry. It's a new Cadillac. With those fishtails, it should be able to swim.
Remley, it ain't swimming. It's sitting on the bottom. I ought to take
temper,
you with a...
Temper. Let's not get excited. We got a simple problem. All we got to do is figure how to get a Cadillac out of a swimming pool.
That's all we got to figure.
That's all.
All we got to do is to write General Motors and ask them how to salvage one of their convertible submarines. Frankie, we got to get it out of there before somebody discovers it. If we ever get caught with that thing...
Oh, Phil!
Uh-oh, here comes Hank, the night watchman.
Phil, what was that crash I heard out here? It sounded like... Phil! There's a car in the pool.
Carpool?
Don't be silly, honey. Well, they haven't had carpool since the war ended.
Why, it's Mr. Scott's Cadillac. How did it get in there?
He's a very sloppy parker.
Yeah, you see, he parks his car in the pool every night. And that way, when he leaves in the morning, it's already washed.
Cut it out. Did you fellas do this?
Well, we might as well tell her the truth, Remley.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to.
All right. How did it happen?
Well, Mr. Scott left his car standing out in the hot sun.
I see. And it got overheated, so it went in for a dip.
Oh, Alice, do you expect us to believe that?
Yeah, look, honey, you're going to have to come up with a better excuse than that. Now, just how did you get that car in the pool?
Well, I was talking to Mrs. Scott, and... Wait a minute, I didn't do anything. Oh, fellas, I don't know how you got it in there, but you'll have to get it out before Mr. and Mrs. Scott see it.
How?
Well, use our car and tow it out.
Yeah, that's it. Now, look, honey, you can go in and keep Mrs. Scott occupied so she doesn't see what we're doing.
All right, but make sure you get that car out. Mother wanted me to marry a lawyer. Father wanted me to marry a doctor. But did I listen?
Nah.
I had to be a wise guy and wind up with a trap drummer.
Well, I had my own ratchet.
Come on, Ratch, let's get your car.
Remley, look, I've been thinking about something.
What?
My car's too light to pull that heavy car out of that pool.
Yeah, you might... Wait a minute, look. Scott's got another car in the garage, a big Lincoln.
Lincoln?
Yeah, that ought to be able to pull it out.
Yeah. Now, look, I'll get a heavy chain out of my trunk, and you back the Lincoln up to the pool. Huh, Remley? Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Back it, I said, up to it, not in it. We got the chain around the rear axle of the Lincoln. All we got to do now is put the other end of the chain around the bumper of the Cadillac.
That's all. Well, which one of us is going to dive down and attach it?
That's simple. You.
It ain't that simple. I ain't going. Why don't you do it?
I can't swim.
Then you're the guy to do it. You'll get down to the bottom faster.
Now, look, Remley, somebody's got to go down there and back...
Somebody else. I ain't no fish. I ain't...
Doing here?
Well, if it ain't Julius, the barracuda.
Little carp face himself.
Yeah. What are you guys up to? Why you got that Lincoln on the lawn?
Because we got a Cadillac in the pool.
Oh, that's different. You got a what in the where?
We got a Cadillac in the pool.
I gotta report these guys to the juvenile authorities. They just do these things to derange my immature brain.
Keep telling you that we got a car in the pool. Now, if you don't believe it, look for yourself.
Yeah, bend over the pool and look straight down.
Let me see. Hey, you guys ain't kidding.
Curly's bending over.
So he is. Shall we conga?
Left.
1, 2, 3, kick!
Look at that, he went right straight down.
Yeah. Look at him down there. Hey, Remley.
Huh?
Quick, while he's still on the bottom, throw him the chain.
Yeah. Oh, look, he's surfacing.
Yeah. Man the harpoon.
Right.
What are you, a couple of wise guys or something?
Julius, as long as you're swimming, do us a favor. Dive down to the bottom and attach the chain to that bumper.
Go bang your heads together. I'm getting out of this pool.
Not until you attach this chain.
Don't tell me what to do. I'm climbing out of here. Quit stomping on my little fingers.
Will you put the chain on?
All right, you monsters. Probably safer down there anyway. Here I go.
Hey, Remley.
Huh?
How long do you think it'll take him?
Oh, he'll be down there about 10 minutes.
Can a person stay underwater that long?
Sure.
And stay alive?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Hey, look, he's coming up already.
Oh.
Well, I got an attack.
Thanks, kid. You can come on out now.
I'll get even with you. One of these days, if I stay away from you guys, I'm going to grow up. And when I do...
Oh, stop beeping, will you? Shake the water out of your head. Look, Julius, Frankie and me are going to get to Lincoln and start pulling that Cadillac up. Now, you stay here and let us know how it's coming out.
Okay. Fellas, the best way to do this is leave a little slack in the chain and then start with a sudden jerk.
Wait a minute. Listen, kid, don't tell me how to do this. I'm a grown man, and I know more about it than you do. Now, come on, Frankie, get in.
Yeah. How are you going to do this, Curly?
I got it all figured out. Best thing to do is to leave a little slack in the chain and then start with a sudden jerk. Let her go. Hang on, here we go, right? Hey, Remley, we must be getting it out. We're moving.
Yeah.
She's awful heavy, though. It's dragging.
Hey, Curly, isn't the lawn level here?
Yeah.
Why is the car pointing uphill?
Hey, fellas!
What?
You better come back here and get your rear wheels!
Rear wheels? Oh, Frankie, what did you do? Let's get out and look. Oh, Remley, look, we ripped out the whole rear end out of this car.
You did it again, didn't you?
Let's keep it plural. We did it. Now, what are we going to tell Mr. Scott?
Don't tell him anything. Maybe he won't notice it.
He won't notice it. How can he help it? Look at the way it's squatting. What are you laughing at?
Mr. Scott's got the only link in it starts from a crouching position.
Now, Peter, will you, kid, get going? We're in enough trouble. Uh-oh, Remley, here comes Scotty. He's going to murder us when he
Remley,
sees us.
Remley, I just saw my lawyer, and he said I can't do a thing. So I fired him. But I've got half a mind.
You got half a Lincoln, too.
What are you talking? Oh, no! What happened to my car?
Is something wrong with it?
Something wrong? Half of it's here and half of it's down there. Look at it.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like a dachshund, doesn't it?
Oh, my beautiful $6,000 special Lincoln cut in half. What can I do with it?
Do what the Santa Fe does with the Chief. Run it in two sections.
Oh, you two. I'll take care of you later. Right now, I'd better tow this out of the driveway before my guests come. I'll get my Cadillac. My Cadillac. It was over in the... Where's my Cadillac?
Oh, that's in the pool.
Oh, in the pool. In the pool! Oh, no! No, 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 no! My Cadillac in the pool! My Lincoln torn in half! Both my cars ruined! What am I going to do?
Sell your house and move near a bus stop.
You're responsible for this. I'm in no condition to have a party. But at least I'll have the pleasure of taking care of you two. Come here.
He's not having a party. We might as well go, Curly.
Yeah, ain't no sense in hanging around. So long, Scotty.
Come back here. Come.
No. You didn't want me before, so I'm not going to stay now.
And if Frankie can't stay, I'm not going to stay either.
All I want to do is get my hands off you.
Curly's gaining on us.
If I catch you, I'll tear you limb from limb. I'll rip you apart. I'll throttle you with my bare hands.
Full speed ahead, Remley.
Come back, you coward!
and Phil will be back in just a moment. But first, here's your Rexall Family Druggist. Everyone knows that vitamins are necessary to life, but a lot of people don't know how scientists measure these mysterious substances to be sure they're present in vitamin products in the proper quantity. The other day I told a customer that in Rexall's laboratory, certain vitamins are measured by seeing how brightly they glow.
Glow? Well, what on earth do you mean?
Just what I said, ma'am. Rexall's men of science can check small amounts of certain vitamins in a product by determining how much light they give off.
Look, I know Rexall scientists are good, but this you've got to explain.
Well, here's how it's done. First, the vitamin is treated with a chemical that makes it fluorescent under ultraviolet light. In other words, it glows.
I'm with you so far.
Then it's placed in a machine where a photoelectric cell, you might call it an electric eye, receives this glow and transmits it in terms of electricity to a special kind of meter. The amount of electricity registered on this meter is the exact measurement or weight of the vitamin. Believe it or not, this method can measure vitamin substances down to one gamma. And that, ma'am, is 1/28,000,000th of an ounce.
No wonder you never hesitate to recommend Rexall drug products.
Me and 10,000 other independent Rexall druggists, ma'am. And it's only natural. You see, we know that all of the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company get the same kind of up-to-the-minute testing, the same patient painstaking care. That's why in every store with the orange and blue Rexall sign on the windows, there's a family druggist who will tell you, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall.
Well, Phil, you and Frankie really messed up Mr. Scott's party yesterday. I wonder what he's going to do with his two cars.
He's trying to sell them. He's got an ad here in the paper. Look, it says, for sale cheap, a disjointed Lincoln and a waterlogged Cadillac. Hey, do you think he's mad at me and Frankie?
I think so, dear. Look what it says underneath. For sale, even cheaper, one left-handed guitar player and a curly-headed band leader.
He can't sell Remley. He belongs to me.
This program was produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast were Lois Corbett and Gail Gordon. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. This is Bill Foreman wishing good health to all from Rexall.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Here you go.
There you go.
NBC.
Yeah, Dave, that would have been a tough one to put on a television show.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one also where they flooded the kitchen, was diving into it to find, because they dropped Alice's ring down the sink. And so instead of pulling out, they flooded the sink, the kitchen. And, it just, the second time I tried to drown Julius. So, yeah.
Doggone it. Well, I'll bet we got something we can learn around. Yeah?
We do.
House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar, presented by me. With apologies to pretty much everyone within the sound of my voice, but especially Gar. The moral is, unlike a duck, Cadillacs don't float.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Yes, it was. I'm ashamed of me.
Yeah, you think with that fin it could swim around. Yeah, you think with that fin it could swim around, though, you know?
I could have improved on my delivery.
That was fine. That was fine. It wasn't as good as Gar, but it was fine. You know?
Nothing's as good as Gar.
That's
when it comes
true.
To morals.
Yeah.
When it comes to morals, he's the man.
He is the man. He is the man.
Cars are a big part of life. They were mine. It was my, you know, I didn't have the greatest family life, so it gave me a sense of freedom. Whee!
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yep. A lot of memories with various cars. I've had many over the span of my life. Wrecked quite a few.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Yeah, I've wrecked quite a few. I'm lucky to be walking.
I totaled a couple myself, Dale. I am in that same club.
Good car movies, too. I was Universal Monster Channel has been playing The Car. Remember The Car with Brolin?
James Brolin. Yeah.
My favorite line, cat poo. This old lady just yells at the car and she yells cat poo for some reason. I don't know why.
There you go.
It's up there with the... it's one of the all-time great movie quotes, cat poo. It's right up there with...
take me a size of Jack's food.
Yes, that's another favorite. Which hopefully has nothing to do with cars.
It's something about the intake of a substance, gasoline to cars is alcohol to he.
Yes. Yep.
Like you're kind of like Earl Holliman was in Forbidden Planet there.
Yes. I just saw, I had to save it. It was a picture from, it was a contest of Color Robbie the Robot. It's the greatest thing. It has nothing to do with cars. Although the Lost in Space robot has something to do with cars. A recent post of ours has a picture of the Lost in Space robot in a in a convertible. It's funny. With a cop pulling him over.
Over at the Alien Mini Golf Vacation, there is a duplicate of the robot there in the... and Billy Mooney signed it.
No way.
I took a picture of me with that robot several years back. But, yeah, that's cool.
And where is it?
In Medina at the, one part is Casa Noel, the other is the Alien Mini Golf Vacation.
Oh, I have to visit. I have to visit. I must see the robot.
Mini golf vacation is really cool. It is literally, it's 3D. You wear these glasses with all these neon lights and everything. It just
cool.
Turns everything really, other movie, science, sci-fi movie memorabilia there as well.
I could get into some Alien mini golf. That sounds pretty cool. Another good car movie, Christine. If you're
so what about Duel?
The...
Would you call that a car movie? Duel?
Car slash truck. But yeah. I mean that was definite car trouble for Dennis.
For Dennis
Hopper.
Weaver. Yeah.
Or Dennis Absolutely. Weaver rather, not Hopper Weaver.
Yeah.
Yep. And another good car story for you tonight.
You're leaving out a very important car.
Which car is that?
The AI car of all time, Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, there you go. I thought you were going to say my mother the car. and a really fun movie for me. We have some time today. Why not? A real fun movie for me today was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's true. That's true.
I like the music from it, you know, the songs and stuff like that. It was just... real good. Real good. Classic Dick Van Dyke
Do you know who wrote that story that was the movie was based on?
Benny Hill.
Ian Fleming.
Oh, that's right. It was Ian Fleming.
Ian Fleming. And they used the same production company that made the early Bond films, made Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
A fun movie. Because every kid dreamt your car could fly. I mean, come on.
Yep, yep.
A lot of my toy cars could fly when I was a kid. My Hot Wheels, man, they could take off and zoom around.
I still dream that sometimes, but we got enough crazy people on the ground. We don't need them in the air, too.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And with that, let's move on over to Theater 5, the 10-year-old car.
That 10-year-old car, yes. And that was, I'm not sure which episode. It is from May the 7th of 1960 and 5.
Good to get to bed. Laird? Laird? Now, where's my robe? Laird? Oh, what in the world? Laird! Laird! Oh, dear God, he's been shot.
Double cross.
Oh, don't try to talk.
In the car. Diamonds. It...
Diamonds?
Don't let him get away with it. Promise me. Promise me.
Yes, yes.
A double cross.
Laird! Laird!
Theater 5 presents The 10-Year-Old Car.
There. The water will be boiling in a few minutes. Instant okay?
Oh, sure.
Sweet of you to come over on your day off like this. You're the only one who does, you know.
Well, they want to, Lucy. It's just that, well, they're scared in a way.
Scared?
We act so suspicious of everyone and vindictive-like. Like you'd kill Laird's murderer yourself if you could.
I would.
But you can't take the law into your own hands.
I will if I get the chance. And I might get it. My plan works.
Lucy, it's been 6 months. Listen, Laird wouldn't have wanted you to act like this. Suspicious of everyone, keeping yourself locked up in the house.
I'm not locked up.
May as well be. You never leave the yard.
I have my reasons.
Well, Laird wouldn't have wanted you to...
I know. Laird, the life of the party. Always ready to have a round with the boys. And that's for the girls.
Now, Lucy...
I know how people gossiped. His being a salesman out on the road. And with his looks. But he always came home to me, and he loved me.
Of course he loved you. But you can't make a shrine out of this house and the car...
I'm putting the car up for sale.
You what?
In fact, when you rang the bell, I thought it was Tony DeLuca. He's coming over to look at it.
Well, I'm glad. I was afraid you were going to start lighting candles around it or something.
I guess you don't understand any more than anyone else. Oh, how could you? You're so pretty and, I mean, the kind men like. And, well, I had friends, too, but Laird was the first. The only one for me. Oh, there's Tony. Tony, come through here.
If you got the key to the garage, Mrs. Pauling, I
No,
can...
this way.
Okay, I just thought, you know...
I've kept the garage door locked ever since it happened.
Oh.
The only way we can get in is through this door here in the kitchen. I'll get the key.
Well, hello, Em.
Hi, yourself, Tony.
Hey, you know, you look great in that dress. I like yellow.
Thanks.
Here we are. There.
Man, it's pitch dark in here.
I boarded up the window. In just a sec, I'll get the lights. There.
I hope you weren't afraid of somebody stealing something, Miss Pulling.
Stealing something? Like what, Tony?
Oh, you know, hubcaps, kid stuff.
No.
Huh? Hey, when was the last time you drove this thing?
I haven't.
You mean it's been sitting here ever since...
That's right.
I'm sure Lucy had her reasons.
How much do you think I could get for it?
I don't know. Let's see. 10 years old, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, once this dust gets off it, paint's in good condition.
Laird took pride in this car.
Yeah, I know. Old, but it still looked mighty sharp. You know, you got to run a car once in a while.
Oh, Em, will you get the stove? The water's boiling for the coffee.
Sure.
Hey, you want a cup, Tony?
Don't have time. Thanks, Em. I didn't know you and she were such good friends.
We weren't until the last few months. She's been awfully kind and helpful to me, too.
Yeah, yeah, she's got a good heart. Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't expect a dish like that to...
The car, Tony. Hmm? What do you think I can get for it?
Oh, well, I can tell better after I get it to the shop.
It's not going to the shop. I'm selling it here, right from this garage.
But Mrs. Pauling...
I have a very good reason.
Oh. Well, let's see. I'd guess right off, if you got $80, it'd be pretty good.
80? What about, say, 100 and a quarter?
Oh, gee, not a chance.
Is there anything about this car that might make somebody want to pay more than 80?
Well, like what?
Well, anything a collector might want, for instance.
If you mean because of what happened
no,
here...
No, I mean just anything at all.
Well, it ain't old enough to be an antique. For a kid, it'd be a rod, you know. To a junk man, radio, heater, tires. No, Mrs. Pauling, nobody's going to pay you any more than 80. Well, 100, maybe, if he didn't know better, you know.
I see. All right. If you get anyone asking for this kind of car, send him over. I'll sell it for $500.
$500? I just told you. Look, this isn't a limousine, you know.
Everything all settled?
Yes, it's just fine.
I told her it's worth 80, you know. Well, 100 tops.
Hey. I'll pay $100 for it. My kid brother's been begging me
for... Well, she wants 500.
Oh, Lucy, you can't get that much.
That's the price. What do I owe you, Tony, for your time?
Oh, listen, if I can't do that much for you...
Well, thanks, Lode. I'll get the lights.
Good to see you again, Mrs. Pauling. I'll see you around, Em. Soon, I hope.
Yeah, I'll drop by the shop one of these days.
Yeah, you do that.
Thanks again, Tony. Bye.
So long.
You'll get in trouble teasing like that. Laird said he was a real hothead.
Don't worry about me. Here's your coffee. Now, tell me what this is all about. $500. Nobody's going to pay you that.
Somebody will.
Hope you're right. I guess you could use it.
Laird didn't leave much. And the typing I do here for Mr. Billings pays the rent. Now, that's not important. Em, you say people are interested in me. In what way?
Oh, well, you know, a man being killed in his own garage and... Everyone's bound to be curious.
Is anyone especially interested?
Well, if they would be, do you suppose they'd act like it? Why, you'd be on them in a minute, and so would the police.
The police? They haven't come up with anything.
Well, there wasn't much to go on. You said he didn't say anything before he died. Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Well, you see, no wonder. Even the police are afraid to tell you anything.
Do you know something?
Forget it.
No, I won't. You tell me, Em, right now.
Well, it's nothing.
Yes, it is. Tell me, or I'll...
All right, all right. It's just that some waitress says she saw Laird the night he was killed and in this tavern just outside of Grosset. There was this guy sitting with him, and they were arguing.
Who was the guy?
Well, how should I know? She said he was kind of tough-looking, and he talked like one of those New York gangsters on television.
What are the police doing about it?
Well... Looking for him, I guess.
They'll flub it. You'll see.
Oh, it's late. I gotta run. Listen, thanks for the coffee.
Well, spread the word around, will you, that I got a car for sale? Tell them I'll treat the buyer royally. Wine him and dine him.
Well, that ought to be worth something.
And the price is $500. Don't forget.
I won't.
Bye. Bye.
Six months already. Oh, Laird, darling. I feel so close to you here where it happened. As if a part of you still lingered, waiting for me to do something. Who double-crossed you? Why? Can't you give me a sign? The scar. Here it is, Laird. It wasn't yours. Somebody left it in the car that night.
Who was it, Laird?
And the diamonds. A handful of diamonds hidden so carefully. Oh, Laird, I can't trade them for your life. But I promise you I'll trade them for your murderer. And darling, I'll find the answers. I promise you.
Somebody.
Somebody knows they're here. Maybe not today. Not tomorrow. But when someone thinks the coast is clear, he'll come along and offer me $500 for this 10-year-old car.
you go. Let's see. A
dramatic
car. Yeah. Hey.
So $500, what would that be in today's... we don't have the Garculator out.
We do not have a Garculator.
But I would imagine that would be kind of a hefty sum for a 10-year-old car. But I tell you what, during the pandemic, you try and buy a car, even a used car, and you'd be paying through the nose. It looks like, you know, the houses, people were paying sometimes $5,000, $6,000 over the asking price.
Yep. Gotta love it.
Yep. So,
more fake
yeah,
money. Yay.
Good. Let's start off with having this thing underwater. And underwater isn't good for cars or houses.
No. Not good.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is an interesting tale. She's trying to snare the killer. And let's see if she has any luck as we wrap up.
Let's do that.
Theater 5, the 10-year-old car.
Mrs. Pauling? This is me, Tony DeLuca. Yeah. Hey, listen, I got a buyer for your car. What? Hey, you guys, you want to hold it a minute? Can't you see I'm on the phone here? Now, hold on a minute, Mr. Pauling. Yeah, don't get so excited. Yeah, well, he'd like to look at it. But there's only one thing. The most this old man will go for is 100. But if you want my advice, Mrs. Pauling? Are you still there? Hung up. That's funny. Oh, hi there, ma'am.
Hi. Fill it up, please, Tony.
Okay, sure, ma'am. I was just talking to Mrs. Pauling on the phone. Had a buyer for a car.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but not at her price.
She turned it down?
Hung up on me. Boy, I tell you, they better find out who killed him pretty soon before she goes off the deep end.
Mm-hmm. Police having any luck finding the guy Laird was talking to?
What guy?
You know, the gangster type. The one he was quarreling with in the tavern in Griffith the night he got killed.
Oh, that. Well, not that I know of. I'll get the windshield.
Thanks. Always said you were a doll.
It's my pleasure, Em. I like working on a swell car like this. And you really fit it, too.
Oh, come on, tell me.
No, I mean it, like a movie star or something.
How much I owe you?
$235.
Okay, here you are, even.
Thanks. Say, Em, you just get off work?
Yeah.
Well, look, I'll be checking out in 5 minutes. What do you say maybe you and me could, go have something to eat, see a movie maybe?
Busy tonight, Tony.
Some other time?
Well, maybe.
It's Saturday night, there's a dance.
Sorry.
Hey, look, what have you been building up to all this time? I mean, you've been acting to me like...
Like what?
You know.
I'm sorry if I gave you the wrong idea.
Well, I don't like it. I mean, you've been leading me on,
you're
and I don't...
Quiet. The guys will hear you.
You've been making with the pitch all this time.
Look, don't make a bigger fool of yourself than you already have.
No dame like you is going to call me a fool.
You get your greasy hands off the door. I'm leaving.
You think you're something, don't you? Driving around in a yellow convertible, that scarf trailing behind you. You don't kid me none. It was a laugh at Mrs. Poling's that day. You're such a good friend, she says, trying to be so helpful. You were seeing Laird plenty before he died, and everyone but his wife knows it.
You know, the trouble with this town, there's too many nosy gossips like you.
You don't like the town? Well, then leave. Make the married woman happy.
You can spread it around. I'm leaving for New York just as fast as I can.
New York, sure, where the big spenders are. Like Laird, huh? Laird always had it to spend, didn't he?
Don't go on, Tony. Close the door, unless you want your arm ripped off.
His wife can't even afford to keep the old car. Well, I know why you're buddy-buddy with Mrs. Pauling. You got a guilty conscience. You didn't get a car like this selling lipsticks at Hamilton's.
If you don't close that door, I'll...
You got all the things Mrs. Pauling ought to have got from Laird, and I ought to tell her.
She wouldn't believe.
Yeah? Well, if I told her I saw you and Laird driving real slow and romantic long about dark out toward Moonlight Ridge that night he got killed, would she believe that, huh?
You wouldn't.
No, she's been hurt enough. But it's a laugh seeing you trying to make it up to her now, because it's too late for that.
Let me go.
Don't worry, I will.
It's you.
Well, you were expecting a plumber, maybe?
No, I just... Come in.
Hey, smile. I got good news. You wanted a buyer for the car? You got one.
Who?
Me.
You?
Well, yeah. Well, don't look so shocked. Here, in my purse, I got a check made out.
$500?
That's right.
Why?
Well, I want to buy it. Well, gee, I thought you'd be tickled silly.
But you?
Well, it's for my kid brother. You know, Bud remembers Laird tearing around in it, or maybe it's because it's red and that jazzy upholstery. Flashy. Well, he likes that. Hey, remember? You were going to wine and dine the buyer. I could at least use some coffee.
Oh, yes. Coffee.
Now you can relax. Forget about it. Cancel the ad in the paper.
You've been following the ad?
Oh,
why?
No reason. Here's a check. I hope it starts a whole new life for you. Me too. Here, I'll get a cup.
Oh, no. Sit down. It'll be ready in a minute.
Oh, boy. Well, Bud be surprised. Ah, he'll paint it up. You know, those stripes and... Hey, what you looking like that for?
I have something to show you. Here.
Hey, where'd you get that scarf? I had one like it.
You had one like it? It's a man.
Bud's. I know. Yeah, well, it was. I borrowed it and never gave it back. I thought it was lost. Where'd you find it? It's the best yet for holding down my hair in the car.
Coffee's hot.
I thought it was gone for good.
Here you are.
Thanks. Aren't you going to join me?
In a minute.
Okay. Shoo! Strong. This is left over from last night. Hey, what's the matter, Lucy? You okay?
Never felt better. I'll get myself a cup. Em, how well did you know Laird?
Oh, I don't know.
Did you ever see him... By yourself?
Oh, now, look, if you heard anything, take it with a grain of salt, huh? Now, I don't know why I'm so tired all of a sudden.
Why did you do it, Em?
Oh, look, a couple of times he saw me on the street and asked me to have a drink. You know Laird.
Maybe I didn't.
Oh, I'm so sleepy. Well, this ought to pep me up. It's black as tar.
You made him cheat, steal. What went wrong, Em? You wanted all of it, was that it?
Lucy, we saw each other some, and I'm sorry. I'd give anything now if I... Lucy, help me. I'm so dizzy.
Nobody's going to help you. It's too late for that.
The coffee.
I kept waiting. Thinking somebody would try to break into the garage. Somebody who knew those diamonds were in the car.
Huh?
Oh, but you were too smart for that, Em. Oh, yes. But then I figured out a way. Sell the car. Nobody would pay that price. Nobody but the one who knew the diamonds were there. No one but the murderer.
Lucy, no. Lucy...
I promised Laird I'd get even. I promised him. Em? Em? Laird, I kept my promise to you, but heaven only knows why. You stole for her. You wanted so much out of life, and you settled for her. Oh. Yes?
Poli?
Yes.
I see in the paper you got a car for sale.
What?
Yeah, it's just what I've been looking for. Of course, your price is a little steep.
Oh, not that I object to paying it.
You see, I collect different car models. You don't see many of them kind around anymore.
No.
I'm right down here at DeLuca's. He says I'm wacky. But if you're going to be home, I'll be right over, and he can tow it to where I'm staying.
Oh, what have I done, M?
Oh, I got the cash, Mrs. Poling. Pretty good salesman, I'd say you were. $500 for a 10-year-old car.
Oh, God. What have I done?
Theater 5 has presented The 10-Year-Old Car, written by Marquita Fisher, directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Laura Stewart, Diane Russo, Ed Zimmerman, and Owen Jordan. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
That's right.
You know, Dale, you had a good point there. She said, what have I done? You know, why is it the first thing when somebody does something? What have I done? And they know what they did, you know?
Weren't you there? Weren't you there?
I think they were.
And what did she feel bad for anyway? Dude was sleeping with, you know.
You know, sleeping with her husband. I mean, that's not a good reason to poison somebody.
Sure, you know, what the hell. Oh, there's Gar the Ghoul now. $500 in 1965 would be $4,925.81. But it was a 10-year-old car, so wouldn't that be 1955?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it would be 1965, paying that for a 10-year-old car. Yeah, that would be a little bit overpaying, I think.
Yeah. Back when we were in high school, Dale, I mean, we were in high school together, but I had a buddy who was a body man. He ended up owning his body shop, very successful, just recently retired, but he told me, Dave, any car that runs is worth $100. That was in the late 70s.
Yep.
So $500, asking for a 10-year-old car for $500 back in 65, that is a heck of a lot of money.
Car's blue book value. Fourth on that, now that'll buy a good set of tires, maybe. I don't know.
Yep.
And the battery they run on, but I don't know.
Yep.
There's probably something we could learn, Dave.
We could, thanks to Gar.
Yep, it's your turn. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar, performed by Dave.
Apologies to Gar. Poison always touches the culprit and the victim equally.
That's what people used to do, Gar. They'd take the battery out. They'd take things off of cars. Or they'd switch and put the crummy battery in there, take the good one out, and turn around and sell it. That's how you make a little money on the side there, selling cars. Not that I would suggest to any of you do that out there. Let the buyer beware.
I once had an old battery stolen out of my car, an old battery. It was I was a little closer to downtown Akron at the time. And I asked my friend, I said, why would somebody steal my old battery? It doesn't make any sense. He says, yeah, it does. I said, what do you mean? He says, okay, if you lose your battery, what do you have to do? I have to go out and buy a new one. They know where a new battery is going to be next time. Ooh.
There you go.
Ooh.
He sold your Geo Metro for $200. Sounds like you did pretty good.
Actually, Geo Metros are pretty cool. That was at the what? Three-cylinder
like,
car, yeah.
Yeah, they were like a little wagon, kind of?
No, they were kind of like the little Chevy Spark that they have that are still four-cylinder, but the Geo Metro, that was a three-cylinder, dude, and it got great gas mileage. I had one employee when I worked at the Taco Bell in Stowe there. She had one. She drove, I says, you got to have a little trouble around mountains, but other than that, it's a good car.
Batman to the Batmobile. Robin to the Metro. There you go.
Yep, dear.
I liked the car episodes of American Pickers. They would find old cars, you know, in barns or whatnot. But once in a while,
right.
there were these little, like, pedal cars. Remember kids' pedal cars? Those are actually collectible because they used to make them and style them after actual cars. So like if you could find a 57 Chevy pedal car, that's like a big deal, right?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, they did almost every episode that had a good garage had at least one car in there. And then when they did Mike Mason's episode, they bought a couple of cars. They didn't really show that part of it, but they did buy a couple of cars out of there and a motorcycle.
Of course.
Which Mike drove off to the next site.
Yeah, Mike likes motorcycles.
Oh, yeah, Mike likes motorcycles.
Yes, he do. I like those, and I like the Count, who actually used to be a horror host in Nevada, or Nevada for some of you. What was he like? He was like an Elvis vampire type dude, but that he does not talk about that much now. Now he's Danny, the restoration guy for cars. What is that called?
Okay.
I forget the name of it, but they restore old cars. That's another good History Channel show. Who should be endorsing us and paying us money for giving them recognition. But what are you going to do?
That's right. And Roku owes us about a lot of back money, too, by the way, you know?
Oh, Roku, yep.
By the way, speaking of Roku, I'd like to give you one of Dave's picks. I recently watched the whole series. It was only one season. If you go to the CW app for free, you can watch the entire season of Forever, a really cool show about a guy that he gets, every time he gets killed, he dies, he comes back up in water. So it's just kind of like, so like in the Hudson River is where he usually would come up, you know, that kind of a thing. But
popping up like flies.
But it was pretty cool. Neat premise of the show and done very well. So if you get the chance, one of Dave's picks on Roku is on the CW, this program called Forever.
Forever and ever and ever. That's a good premise. I like it.
Yeah. Have to check that out. It's pretty cool, Dale. And Gar, it kind of was, except that they left it so that it kind of led into a season without the really bad guy able to hurt anyone. So it kind of wrapped up the story in a way, but left it open to continue. But they even tried to sell it to Netflix because Netflix had recently taken on Fox outcast, which was Lucifer. And so they tried to sell it to Netflix, and Netflix didn't go, so it was done. But a fun show. Really cool show.
Forever.
And one of the, I think the guy that holds the most, the record for most, meaning most TV shows on television of different kinds, Judd Hirsch is one of the main characters in that.
Oh, no kidding. From Strapes fame. No, that's just Reinhold. Sorry. Different guy.
From Taxi. How's that? From Taxi.
There you
from
go.
Dear
now
John,
it's all coming together.
He was in the Bob Newhart's last series where he played the comic book writer, which made it about 6 episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. So, and Dick Martin did a lot of the directing. I know it's really off subject, but he did a lot of directing of Bob Newhart's later stuff. Comic genius in his own right. He just got tired of being the stupid guy all the time.
And moved
on.
For
the Martin and Rowan. Yep.
Yep. They should have kept that going. They had a good team going, Rowan and Martin.
But they did. And they go to Vegas a couple times a year. Not that Dick Martin wanted to, but he knew it helped Dan Rowan, because Dan Rowan, being the straight man, didn't have a whole lot of other gigs. And he just went into directing. He directed a ton of television. Dick Martin did.
Yep.
Anyway, we have one more show to go yet tonight.
We do, and we won't keep you in suspense any longer. It is an episode of Suspense called The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag. Do they make jags in powder blue? I don't know.
They must have.
They do now.
Yep. And it comes to us originally from, what would that be? That would be August 28th of 1960.
Ooh.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
That's the year we were born.
The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag. Written for Suspense by Walter Black.
In my life. The more I sweep it, the more I stir up. Oh, that's the trouble with these summer places. By the time you get them clean, it's time to shut up and leave. Oh, darn. Be right there. I said I was coming. Now, what's the matter, miss?
Can I come in?
Well, sure. What happened? You had an accident or something?
All right. I cracked up my car. Just down the road. There's a big wall.
The beach wall, yeah.
Well, I guess I must have been going too fast. The next thing I knew, I'd hit it. I must have blacked out for a minute.
You got a family doctor you want me to call?
I don't know.
What?
I don't even know who I am.
How's the bed, hon?
Oh, it's fine, thank you, Mrs. Sims.
Now, you call me Claire. Everybody else does.
Claire.
That's better. The man at the police station said he'd bring a doctor with him.
I feel so lost, not even knowing my own name.
But you do. It's Kendall Endicott. Kind of a nice, out-of-the-ordinary name, too.
But how do I know it's mine? A checkbook with a name printed on it? I could have stolen it.
You're not the type, hon.
What type am I? I don't know anything about myself.
Well, take it from me, hon. You're just not the type. Besides, that car you were driving, that's a Jaguar. You don't buy those for cigarette coupons. Incidentally, you're lucky. All you need's a new front grill. Oh, thank goodness, that must be the police. Now, no more worrying, hon. We'll find out all about you now.
Hello?
check with you again tomorrow, Miss Endicott, and don't you worry. You do just like the doctor said. Just get plenty of rest.
Find out anything, Sergeant Hadley?
Just what you already told me, ma'am.
What'd the doctor say? He wouldn't tell me anything.
He says it looks like amnesia.
Gee. I feel so sorry for her.
Funny first name she's got. Kendall. Ever know a girl by that name before?
No.
Me either. Can I use your phone?
Oh, go right ahead.
I got a hunch. I don't know if it's worth anything, but it doesn't cost anything. Hello, Standard? Let me have the editor, Mr. Jameson, please. He's a friend of mine. I've done him a few favors. Mm. Hello, Mr. Jameson. This is Sam Hadley at headquarters. Well, fine, thanks. You? Swell. Listen, Mr. Jameson, you know more about this town than anybody else. You ever meet anyone named Kendall Endicott? A girl? K, like in Kansas City. Yeah, a double L. Really? Well, yeah, sure, sure. I'll hang on. Now we're getting somewhere.
You know who she is?
Well, not exactly, but he says the name rings a bell. He's going to check their morgue.
The morgue?
Newspaper morgue, lady, where they keep their records.
Oh, well, for a minute, I thought...
Yeah, I know what you thought.
Can I get you some tea or coffee?
Oh, don't bother.
Well, how about something a little stronger? I think maybe I could find something.
I'm on duty, Mrs. Sims.
Oh, sure, but what harm could one little snort do?
Thanks. Hello? Yes, Mr. Jameson. No kidding. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks a lot. You've been a lifesaver. I'll drop by and give you the whole story. Right, so long.
What'd you say?
Plenty. You know who your guest is, lady? Kendall Endicott, heiress to a couple of million bucks.
In just a moment, we will return for the second act of Suspense. Thirsty people everywhere prefer ice-cold Pepsi-Cola. And because it's light, it refreshes without filling.
Charlie, be sociable.
I am, Kay. Pepsi is a favorite of thirsty people from Maine to Hawaii, from Alaska to Florida.
Charlie.
It's perfect for parties or picnics. So serve Pepsi to your guests.
That's helpful. But
this is the sociable part. Keep plenty of Pepsi ice cold and ready. Remember, it goes fast because everybody likes Pepsi.
Singing still sounds more inviting. May I?
Be sociable. Look smart. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay young and fair and debonair. Be sociable. Have a Pepsi.
But singing doesn't say, pick up an extra carton of Pepsi today. Better yet, get a case.
You do that.
You Sergeant Hadley?
That's me. Who are you?
Clay Endicott, Sergeant. I've never been so glad to see anyone in my life.
What'd you say your name? Endicott?
That's right, Kendall's husband. I just heard about it on the radio in my hotel room. I just got to town 2 hours ago. The broadcast didn't give any details, just to contact you. Now, where is she? How is she? Can I see her right away, please?
Sure, sure. She's over on Cliffside Drive, Summer Colony, the other side of town. I'll take you over in a squad car. You can fill me in on some details on the way over.
Sure is, honey, and do I have a surprise for you. Look who's here, hon.
Oh, you're the policeman, aren't you? Sergeant...
Hadley, ma'am. How are you feeling?
All right, thank you.
But look who else is here, Kendall.
I don't know what you mean.
Your husband.
My husband?
Oh, Candy, baby, oh, darling, I'll never forgive myself for staying that extra day in San Francisco. I should have been with you. You see, Sergeant, it's the first time I let her take the Jag out alone. It's an awful lot of car for a beginner to handle.
Yeah, Mrs. Endicott, don't you recognize him?
No.
Honey, it's me, Clay. You have to remember, darling, you don't just wipe out 3 years like that. Now think, darling. You were to meet me at 3:30 today here in town at the Waltham Hotel. We were going to the real estate office together. Now, please, darling, try to remember.
I'm sorry, but I can't.
Sergeant.
Yeah?
Will it be all right if I talk to her a little while, alone? I won't be long.
Up to her.
Darling?
All right.
Maybe if I talk about us, some of it'll come back, darling. Now, we got back from Europe in April. Oh, no, I guess I'd better start.
Gee, such a pity her not recognizing him. How'd you run into him, Sergeant?
Other way around. He heard the 5 o'clock bulletin on the radio.
What are they doing here anyway? I mean, he said something about San Francisco.
He says they came down to buy the old Murchison estate.
Oh, what's that?
Big place with its own private beach down past the yacht club.
Oh, yeah, seen it from the road. Gee. Yeah, I wonder how come she came down ahead of him.
Well, he says there's a kind of deadline on the property. They wanted to get their bid in first.
I didn't even know she was married.
Oh, yeah, that checks out.
She's really rich, isn't she?
So they tell me.
That Mr. Endicott, he's kind of cute.
Smart, too. It takes brains to marry money like she's got.
Oh, Sergeant, they could be in love.
Didn't say they weren't. Speaking of husbands, where's yours? Didn't you both come down for a vacation?
We did. It just so happens that Joe's idea of a vacation is to watch baseball on TV in some nice dim bar with a cold bottle of beer in front of him. He could have done that back in Redwood City, but oh, no. He's got to save up all year to go somewhere else to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You still here, Sergeant?
Thought you might want to lift back to town.
Well, that's very kind of you, but Mrs. Sims, would it be too much of an imposition if I stayed here with my wife?
Stayed here?
I can sleep on the couch right here. Naturally, I'd pay you for your trouble.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Why should you be imposed on for nothing? It's only that my wife feels at home here. I'd rather not move her unless I had to.
Well, he doesn't, does he, Sergeant?
Not up to me, up to you.
It's fine with me, Mr. Endicott. Really, it is. And I know it'll be a real comfort to... Mrs. Endicott.
I understand the doctor's returning in the morning. If she's not better then, he can probably recommend a good private nursing home.
Well, looks like it's settled.
I certainly appreciate all you've done, Sergeant.
Mrs. Sims, I'll check in tomorrow morning.
All right, Sergeant. Bye. Well,
I would say so, my dear Mrs. Sims. I would say very well indeed.
You can cut the act now. What about her?
I'll sell her. It'll take time, but I'll sell her.
I don't trust that cop.
We have one thing in our favor, sweetie pie, time. It's after 6 o'clock. Offices are closed. By the time the worthy sergeant can check more closely into my story, and he's going to, our little pigeon will be plucked and we'll be long gone.
How far have you got?
To the point where even if she doesn't remember me, she's willing to take my word that I'm her dearly beloved.
You bring up the check?
Sweetie pie, I know this was all your idea, but you can certainly trust me to follow orders. Naturally, I mentioned the check, casually. I told her we had only until tomorrow morning to close the deal with a down payment of $40,000. Otherwise, the real estate broker has another offer he's obligated to honor.
What'd she say?
Nothing. I'll bring it up again when I take her supper tray in.
You?
Obviously, sweetie pie. Who else but her adoring spouse? Don't worry, we'll get the money.
How suspicious you think that cop is?
Suspicion is a congenital weakness of all cops. I don't think he actively suspects me. After all, my story was quite plausible.
Thanks to me.
I doff my hat, my dear, thanks to you.
Like I always said, you gotta be prepared to grab your chance when it comes, because it goes by real fast and may never come again.
Spoken like the true philosopher you are, my love. I wonder...
You wonder what?
What it feels like to be really married to $2 million.
You keep your mind on the job. You're already married. And don't you forget who to.
How could I, sweetie pie? You never give me a chance.
Hey, there we go. Classic little tale here.
Yeah, and like the Theater Fives, they were all down to a good 25 minutes, 22 to 25 minutes by the time that it came to this point in suspense. So they have 5 minutes of news, and during that show, you'd have like a couple to 4 minutes of commercials. So, you know, about 22 minutes is what each episode actually was.
They had to do some serious writing to keep that story in that time frame.
Yeah, they did. And I think it's, again, such a homage to the era of the short story back then, because these are all, if they didn't come from the idea of one, it certainly was a short story in itself, you know, a 22-minute story. I think between that and you look at Theater 5, it would, ran for only 2 years, but there were 5 episodes a week. So, you know, that's they did a fair amount of work in 2 years.
Yes, they did. And it sounds like we're going to have some bonus time, gang, a little extra radio for you after we wrap up our fun tale from Suspense, The Girl and the Powder Blue Jazz.
Enjoy your breakfast, my dear?
It was all right. I wasn't very hungry.
Have to keep up our strength, don't we, darling?
Clay, will I regain my memory?
Of course, Candy. Oh, it may take a little time, but what difference does that make? What are a few days or even a week or two, as long as I'm around to take care of you?
Please be patient with me.
Oh, darling, how could I be anything else? All I care about is your getting well.
Tell me more about us. Where were we married?
Believe it or not, at the American Embassy in London.
London?
Mm-hmm. The ambassador himself married us. And you stood right there in front of him in your stocking feet.
Oh, I didn't.
You sure did. Later you told me why. For good luck.
Good luck?
Uh-huh. You told me that as a little girl, whenever you wished very hard for something, you always took your shoes off and squinted up your face and turned around twice.
Well, did I squint up my face?
You sure did.
But I didn't turn around twice, did I?
Only because I stopped you. Darling, let me tell you, as hard as you were wishing, I was wishing even harder for our happiness, our life together.
Oh, Clay.
Oh, my love. Oh, before I forget it, Candy, I'd better take the check now.
Is the house really worth that much?
It's a steal, darling, believe me. Here, make it out to cash. I figured if I walk in waving a lot of greenbacks at the broker, he might come down in price a little. Nothing like a long look at real paper money to soften a man. Oh, here, use my pen, Candy.
You won't be gone long, will you, Clay?
Only long enough to transact our business, honey.
It's funny. I've only just met you. What I mean.
I know what you mean.
And already I feel as if I'd known you for years. Hurry back.
Excuse me, folks, but the doctor's here.
He can come right in, Mrs. Sims. I was just going.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense.
Now, here's Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Bergy, I think someone's looking for you.
Oh, Mr. Bergen!
Well, hello, Effie Clinker. What's wrong?
My car battery is run down. I think it's an acid condition.
Oh, I see. Well, have you seen a serviceman?
Well, I had a blind date with a sailor last night, but he got away.
No, I mean a mechanic. Seeing you own a General Motors car, you should see your GM dealer for service. His mechanics are GM trained. They have specialized tools and factory-approved parts to provide your fine GM car with the GM care it deserves. So if you own a Chevrolet car or truck, a Pontiac, an Oldsmobile, Buick, Cadillac, or a GMC truck, you should make a date with a General Motors serviceman.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Will he have blue eyes? You're dressed. What do you think you're doing?
Oh, I feel so much better, Claire. I thought I'd like to sit out here with you. Clay's not back yet, is he?
Well, he's probably on his way.
You don't mind my being out here, do you?
Mind? Well, of course not. It's just that... Well, did the doctor say it'd be all right?
Oh, yes. He said it might do me good.
What else did he say about your memory?
He says my only problem is to get over the shock of the accident.
Did he say when that would be?
He thought very soon.
Hi, Mrs. Sims. How's my... Kendall, what are you doing out of bed?
Well, the doctor said I could, Clay. I feel ever so much better.
Oh, great.
Have you seen the real estate man?
Sure. Just came from there.
Did he reduce his price?
No. He wouldn't budge. I'm sorry, darling. I'm not the judge of character I thought I was. Still, it's a real steal.
Almost, anyway.
Well, what are you smiling for?
Because I'm so grateful to you.
Well, nonsense. I haven't done anything.
Oh, you're wrong, darling. Without you, I couldn't have done any of this.
What are you talking about?
Game's up, Mrs. Sims. Or whatever your real name is.
What?
In words of one syllable, you've lost. Now, Clay, darling, or is it Mr. Sims? I'll take that $40,000 that's making such a pretty bulge in your jacket pocket.
But, darling, I told you that I...
You've told me so many things, haven't you? The $40,000, please.
Don't look at me.
All right, my dear. As you guessed, I didn't actually turn the money over to the agent. I thought if we waited until you were well enough to see him, you might be able to get a better price.
You don't give up easily, do you?
I beg your pardon?
The money.
Here. You needn't bother counting it. It's all there.
Oh, you don't mind if I run my fingers through it, do you?
Who are you?
How very discerning of you, dear Claire. You put your finger right on it.
You mean she's not Endicott?
That's exactly what she means, darling. I do have to be on my way, but why not tell you? Especially after all your hard work. My name is Taylor, Ruth Taylor. I'm Mrs. Endicott's private secretary. Convenient, huh? Oh, she's still in New York. I came on ahead. And by the time she arrives, I'll have recovered my memory, and I'll be horribly appalled at what I've done. But then, it wasn't really my fault, was it? Everyone told me I was Kendall Endicott. As for the money, I think I'll lose it. The whole idea is perfectly dreadful, but Mrs. Endicott will understand. She trusts me. And $40,000 doesn't mean so very much to her.
You can't get away with it.
But, Claire, dear, I already have. And you and that handsome impersonator can't do anything about it without implicating yourselves, can you? Bye-bye. Thanks for everything.
Hey, what about us? Don't we deserve at least a cut?
You deserve what you're getting, a chance to clear out before my employer shows up. Or would you rather I call that nice Sergeant Hadley? Extortion is a serious offense, I imagine. And who can prove I didn't have amnesia and didn't just recover? Oh, please don't bother seeing me out.
Here goes $40,000.
Oh, stop moaning. We lost, period. Now let's get packed and get out of here.
But it looked like such a perfect setup.
It did, but it wasn't, so shut up about it. From now on, we stick to the horses.
And stay broke, huh?
Better than the stretch in the pen. Now, come on, let's move. Uh-oh. It's not locked. Why, Sergeant Hadley, this is a pleasant surprise.
I doubt it. The girl, the car's gone. She take off?
Not more than 30 seconds ago. You just missed her.
Has something happened, Sergeant?
You still playing games, buddy? Give me Rizzo. Al Hadley. Just missed the girl. Put out an alarm. Pale blue Jaguar, Nevada license 25KE. Yeah, I'll wait right here. Well, you almost got away with it, didn't you, Johnny?
Who?
John Edgar Bell. Well, that's your real name, isn't it? And this is your wife, Miriam?
Never mind us, that girl. She's not Kendall.
Yeah, save your breath. We know. The real one's flying in tonight. Let's get back to you two. How much did you take her for?
Well, that's it. She took us. She took the real Kendall Endicott.
What?
For $40,000. I cashed the check and brought the money back to her, didn't I, Mir?
That's the truth, Sergeant. Can't we make a deal with you? If you take us in, it'll only cost the county the expense of the trial and tie up a lot of your time. But if you let us go, we'll be out of town in an hour and you'll be rid of us for good.
After all, Sergeant, we've never gotten in trouble before, and, well, can't we have a second chance?
A chance to take somebody else?
No, to stick to what we know, playing the horses.
Hadley.
Yeah, Al.
What?
Where? Oh, brother. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
What happened?
The Jaguar crashed through a retaining wall and ended up 500 feet down the canyon.
What about the girl?
She's had her last accident.
What about us?
You're coming down to headquarters for a search. If you're clean, I'll give you an hour to be out of town.
Oh, thanks.
Save it, save it. I've seen grifters like you before. You'll try your luck again sometime, someplace. Just make sure it's a long, long way from here.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag, written for Suspense by Walter Black. Featured in tonight's story were Rita Lloyd, Jane Rose, and Bob Dryden. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
There you go. The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag. I had a powder blue Plymouth Duster. It was a 74 Plymouth Duster.
See, I guess the powder blue is a Jag, but not as a Duster. Duster's, that's a more of a manly car than a,
I know. It had a white hard top, what do you call?
It had that vinyl.
Vinyl roof, that's it, the vinyl roof. I painted it black. I had to man it up a little bit. Manly car, it has black. It's manly.
Yes, very much so.
That's one thing to learn, and there's probably yet another somewhere around
here. Yet
another. There we go. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story written by Gar, performed by whoever's got the knife.
How's that for doing?
Well, we could let him do it himself.
Let's let him do it himself.
If he were only here.
If I was only there. Amnesia and anesthesia sound the same because they're both a gas.
There you go. You got a nice yodel for that.
Yeah.
In fact, you should do a double yodel.
There you go. A double yodel.
Yes, sir. How you feeling, Brother Gar?
You know,
I've the migraine and no voice. I don't know how it works out.
I don't know, but there you go, dragging yourself
over
rocks and broken glass, and Gar gets in here somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Well, as long as he doesn't whiz on the electric fence, he'll be okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I'd have to go find an electric fence, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
So, while Gar's here, why don't you let him spin the wheel for us, Dale?
Yeah,
I'd have to head it back into the studio. I had to leave for just a moment. Sure, Gar, why don't you reach on up there and spin that wheel, O-Radio?
There we go. Spin it.
Yeah, that's better.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
What are your favorite stories?
Well, I kind of like the old-fashioned fairy tales, like the Cinderella story, where at the stroke of midnight, the beautiful coach turns into a pumpkin, and out steps Whittaker Chambers. But, you know, if I had a second choice, I'd take the Three Musketeers.
Hey, I saw the picture they made of that story, Alan, and boy, was it exciting. Why don't we act out a scene from it right here? We'll make believe that I'm that dashing musketeer, Athos.
Oh, no, Jimmy, you can never play Athos. He was a famous fencer, and you don't even have a sword.
Helen, how can you look at my face and say that?
Nah, Jimmy, that's silly. Why, you could never use your nose for a sharp instrument.
No? Then you never seen me slice salami at a barbecue? Come, Helen, let's be on with the Three Musketeers.
I was born in the southern part of France. Of poor but honest parents. Father was the greatest grape crusher in all of France. He had six toes. He used five toes for crushing grapes and his big toe for a cork. Father's name was Cassidy, and one day, just as a joke, I threw a basket full of blue marbles into his grape crushing bin. Now on, he was known as Hopalong Cassidy. Every boy's dream was to become a swordsman with the King's Musketeers. And I went out to practice with my three good friends. En garde, Charlie, Joe, and Freddy. For months we dueled. And when I left, they agreed that I had the sharpest sword. Too bad, Lefty, Shorty, and Stumpy. Yeah, Gurley, I was off to make my fortune in Gay Paris. Broad Bodkins, just as I had mounted my beautiful white horse and was about to leave, my girlfriend Fifi came running up.
Farewell, my future musketeer. And always remember, even though I am here, my soul will be with you and Patty, and my mind will be with you and Patty.
All right, and if I make good, I'll send for the rest of the stuff. Au revoir. Giddy up, horsey, before she asks me to kiss her.
Wait, my beloved. Do not leave so soon. A farewell means a kiss, and my lips are waiting.
Okay. Close your eyes, Fifi.
All right. Oh, that was wonderful. Could I have another?
All right. Go ahead, horsey. Kiss her again. But pushing Fifi aside, I rode away. And once in Paris, I joined the King's Guard. Shortly thereafter, I met a brilliantly bedecked swordsman. And calling out to him, I said, are you one of the famous Three Musketeers? Athos, Porthos, and Aramis?
No, I'm one of the other three musketeers, Quanta, La, and Gusta. But tally-ho and up buttons. And I might add, you have the oddest buttons I ever saw. Where did you come from?
Well, I spent last night at the Ye Old Hog's Head Inn.
And I spent last night at the Ye Old Hog's Head Inn.
I was in room 10.
I was in 10 room also.
Well, I was in the lower bunk.
I was in the upper bunk, and no wonder I didn't sleep a wink all night.
Why?
Just because you're a musketeer, do you have to wear your sword to bed? But I like you, and approve it. I'm going to introduce you to some of the fairest damsels in Paris.
Ah, oh, fig for you. Even though I've only been here a week, I'm already the greatest lover in Paris. Every day, just for the love of me, a woman kills herself by jumping off the palace tower at noon. What time is it now?
1 minute after 12.
Slowpoke?
Well, come, my cavalier. We must hie us hence to the castle of Lady Winter, hence. You see? He had one too many henchmen. You see, Lady Winter is a treacherous spy, and she has plans which were stolen from the king. One of our musketeers has already gone to a castle, but she is holding him captive, so we must go there to get the plans for the king and also to save our fellow musketeer. Watch out, Screen Guild players. Our show has a plot this week.
I'm with you. On to Lady Winter.
Come, my friend. We must get the plans and save the third musketeer. Here's the door that leads to Lady Winter's boudoir. Let's go in.
All right. But remember, we're the Three Musketeers, all for one and one for all.
That's right, all for one and one for all.
And
Oh, you sweet, adorable boy.
How are we going to split this three ways?
Who are you men?
Oh, permit me to introduce myself, madame. I am one of the king's henchmen, and this is my son of a...
Yes, and might I say, madam, that you are the epitome of womanhood, and the graceful flowing lines of your figure are like the flawless perfection of all femininity.
Oh, where did you learn so much about women?
I read the small print in corset ads.
Touché, touché. Now enough of this, balderdash, Lady Winter. We know you have the king's secret plan.
Ah, oh, how silly. If you think I have the plan, you may search me.
All right, Alan, you search her.
Oh, no, you search her.
You search her.
You search her.
You search her.
Okay, I'll search her.
Could we try that waltz again? I think I know the music now. Every week he does the same thing to me.
Look, Lady Winter, why don't you confess? We know you've captured the third musketeer, and we also know that you have the plan.
All right, I'll admit it. I have hidden the plan, but you'll never find out where. They're under something.
Please, Lady Winter, under where?
Under where? Good heavens, you guessed it.
Now, aren't you glad you waited, folks? That's the plot I was telling you about.
Oh, alas, my game is up. Here are your plans. And your third musketeer is in that closet there. But he will never go back with you. He's madly in love with me.
Nonsense. Once a musketeer, always a musketeer. Open the door.
Tell me, third musketeer, do you want to come with us and fight for the glory of France? Or do you want to stay here and make love to this woman and become the lowest creature on earth? How do you feel about that?
I'm feeling mighty low.
Is that where that line came from? I'm feeling mighty low.
Yeah, he was that was Candy Candido, and he did that on the Jimmy Durante show many times. With that line. And here's the thing about Candy Candido. After Lou Costello died and Bud Abbott tried to kind of get back in again, he picked Candy Candido to take over Bud's role, and it just didn't work. They never did any appearances with it. It just, between Bud forgetting his lines and Candy Candido's timing completely different from Lou's, it just never worked out.
So. Tis a shame. But Gar, Dave gave you some advice earlier. We're going to accentuate that just a little bit.
When nature's calling, don't be stalling. Use your common sense. Before you let it flow, find a place to go. Just go with
the electric fence.
If you're going to explode, you can use the commode in igloos, cave dwellings, or tents.
No need to explain when you got a drain.
Don't whiz on the electric fence.
You can swizzle on the sofa.
Piddle in the air.
Tinkle in the toilet.
That's why it is there.
You can let it rain in the breakdown lane while waving at ladies and gents. Just don't whiz on. Don't whiz on.
Where did you go, man?
Gotta have that ending. Well, I feel better now.
Not me. I have to go now.
It's like somebody running the faucet.
I'm telling you.
Oh, man, especially at our age.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mother Nature calls us a lot more often than she used to, that's for sure.
Yep.
I wish she would lose my number.
She's got me on speed dial. It's terrible.
Oh, my.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Well, if all goes well, tomorrow after our show, we're on at 4:30, you know. Or, I'm sorry, 6:30 Eastern with more Car Trouble. Another Theater 5 and Sam Spade. That's what we got. Then right afterwards, if all
afterwards,
goes well.
I'm gonna take some medication for my head, and hopefully my voice gets better. I don't even have a voice for radio this week, but hopefully it'll get marginally better.
There will be a horrible tomorrow. Yep, but luckily, like Dale and I, you always have a face for radio.
That's right.
But you need a voice. You really need a voice, too.
Picky.
Take what you can get, brother. Take what you can get.
Yes, I guess. Yeah.
There we go. He's Hot Rod. There we go. A nice JPEG.
Any car shows or did anybody here really get that much of a kick out of My Mother the Car? I'm just curious.
Now, it works great on Horrible Horror. I'll tell you that.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, the haunted car. Yeah. Every episode.
I have to go ask Tom if we aired that, because I know I've got My Mother the Car with Avery Shriver in it.
Oh, cool.
I do believe you aired that one, but I'm not sure.
That was so funny.
I liked Avery Shriver's role in the Caveman movie with Ringo Starr.
With Ringo Starr. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
As a youngster, I appreciated Avery Shriver. That guy, Rip Torn, that throws confetti. Just hilarious people.
Yeah.
And that's where Ringo met his wife, Barbara Bach, and they're still married.
What a winner that movie was.
Your phone's breaking up there, brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's okay, because it's almost closing time, so that's okay.
Just be careful
when that door closes, so that you're not in the middle. Yeah.
Closing time. Wasn't that a song?
Closing time. Oh, there it is.
I don't know. I don't recognize the way you were singing it, anyway.
Yeah, no. I don't call. If you call what I do singing, well, you're very generous. Don't forget, tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern, want to thank Gigi, SI Paper, Fogs Bank, good old Bob, for hanging out with us for the evening, and those of you that we can't see that are listening live, and those of you in the archive, too. Thanks so much. We'll see you tomorrow. Good luck in prison. Safe them up and drive home drinkly.
The castle lights are growing dim.
What?
There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
No, I'm a ghost.
Can you dig it?
Ouch.
There you go.
That height.
Yeah.
Usually does. It usually does.
Huey's Hot Rod. Hot Rod.
Oh, Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. It's a weirdo.
Yeah.
That's Car Trouble right there. I think that's a good ad for tomorrow.
Is that like the Rat Saint? The weirdos were.
Say that. Wait, what was that?
Were the weirdos tied into Rat Fink? It was great,
no,
crazy,
same
bizarre.
Same era, and certainly inspired by, I think.
Okay.
What was his name?
Big Daddy something.
Big Daddy Roth. Big Daddy Roth. His art was real hip, and I think that was an homage to it. I think. I don't know if there's a direct connection.
Right, and the Weirdos were continuations in that art vein with cars and Weirdos driving the cars, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Picked Huey's Hot Rod.
What was some of your sign-offs? Something about stay safe in prison? Is that what you said?
Yeah, good luck in prison. When I was in sales, I was a loan officer, mortgage loan officer. And we had these crazy, insane guys running the office. It was funny. And they would end their sales meeting, well, good luck in prison, boys. What?
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, some of them may have been headed there eventually.
Yeah, well.
I did not like the stink around the office because people were up to shenanigans and no goodness,
right.
I thought.
Right.
So I got out.
Yeah.
I got the hell out.
I have been, of my 9,628 jobs, of course, I've had a bunch of opportunities to be around an incredible large amount of money and always felt very obligated to be correct in my actions. But for other people, it's opportunity and temptation. And
yeah. My father always taught me to treat other people's money better than you treat your own.
Yeah, and understanding the difference between.
So what'd you do? Steal
your
money?
Someone else's and your own. Yeah. Oh wait, Dale. Yeah. Hey Dale. So you got money?
Me? No.
Yeah. Disclaim that right away. We're on live radio.
Yeah, we got a whole lot of radio.
I've been very happy living in the poverty level. It gives me a place to dream. You know.
Well, I'm headed there. We call it retirement.
Yeah.
I was seeing. Now Dale and Dave, you got to understand this. They just came out with a survey or some type of collection of data that says if you work past 65, the more you work, the less you live. Every year after, you're taking
exactly
off.
What's
a couple
on my
years.
Mind? I could get more money if I work longer, but there'll be less of me.
In order to get the full thing, which isn't that much more than what you're making out early, and Dale and I would be between the early and the full, but it's another like 4 years.
Two years.
So,
and at my age, that's 2 years I don't want to give.
I
want to do more fun stuff like we're doing now, guys. I mean, obviously people like the old time radio. They love the shows you guys host. I got to jump back into that arena. And I will.
Yeah.
You know, the Vortex will always welcome anything you put together, Dale. You know that.
Yeah, they don't know any better. No, they're sweet. I know that. Yep.
You need to
figure out a different venue or something. I'd love to bring back Erie House TV, man.
You could definitely do it on the Twitches.
Yeah. I wouldn't even mind doing it for a cable station, not just the horror stuff. But I would love to just program television broadcasting all day and all night, 7 days a week. You know, do the horror stuff on the weekends, and Sundays do westerns, and the rest of the week comedies and dramas and sitcoms and what have you.
This morning something weird happened, and if it happened 30 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to do anything. A local television station went down, and so they ended up broadcasting on their phones on Facebook the local area news, weather, and traffic.
No kidding.
They could. Yeah, I was like, wow. I was watching it. They're going, you know, well, the entire station, something went wrong. A mouse ate something, or who knows what.
Oh, cool.
And they went down. But it would be amazing if you could get into a slot where you're actually, you know, producer, director, involved with local TV. I think you would get a blast out of it. It's not what it used to be. It's totally, there's a learning curve, but I think you could do it.
Could be.
Hey, you know, the only thing is, like I said, you know, if you go past 65, then, you know, you're cutting off years of your life.
Yeah, well,
yep.
that was our goal, so we can get the Medicare to go with it. So that's the goal.
That health care thing, without that, you're blowing like $1,000 a week.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm only exaggerating a little.
Yeah.
I know. I being a veteran, I have the veterans healthcare system, which is Medicare for veterans, but even better, sort of.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Well, they pulled me through pneumonia and a virus, I guess. So, you know, nod to them. Holy heck is that? So, yeah. Health-wise, I got kicked in the pants last year. I got kicked in the pants this year. Weird.
Sometimes that hurts.
You better get some different pants. Try some different pants.
Well, it's not just that. It makes me walk funny, too.
Oh, my.
You're weird.
I'm not healthy, but I'm still funny. How's that?
Looks on everything. Oh!
Or a voice, yeah, I know. I wanted to chime in to you guys and say hi. I'm still alive.
We're glad you did. We're sorry you're hurting. We hope you feel better soon.
I do, too. But I want to know who's writing this script, because we need to talk.
What script?
You just need to change your pants.
The script of my life.
Oh yeah.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Pants do wonders for people.
Yeah. I understand they lift and separate. Is that true?
No, I think it's a different piece of clothing.
Yeah.
You haven't seen my pants. There you go.
Want to see in that case.
Yeah, I don't want to see your pants. Don't want to see your pants. Keep your pants in your pants.
I will keep my pants in my pants.
Keep your pants in your pants. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Tomorrow, 1930, we got something. On the back burner. There it is. 1940 Chamber of Horror, singular.
Yeah.
Very unusual. Never been seen on my program of 15 years plus. And the pre-feature is going to be My Little Margie. There's a ghost story for My Little Margie, the TV show.
My Little Margie, boy. I haven't seen one of those since CBN gave up running the whole TV show. Yeah.
Tune in. Yeah. I ran across the Chamber of Horrors. The Chamber of Horrors was kind of like Murder in the Blue Room. There's a comedy aspect to it, but it's also a crime something spooky. Very atmospheric for a 1940 film. Noir, possibly, maybe. We like noir, right?
Yes.
You know what? I got a kick out of that Milton Berle movie that you've shown at least once, if not a couple times.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I did too. It was very funny.
Milton Berle and John Carradine made a very good movie.
Yes, and a host of others. It was very funny, and it's the only horror movie he ever made, and I didn't even know he made it until I went looking and found it and brought it to everybody.
Which film was this?
Milton Berle was in a horror movie.
Which one?
Let's see. I will find out if I can do this in the time allotted.
He played a radio announcer that solved crimes. Much like what Red Skelton did with his whistling series, Whistling in the Dark and Whistling in Dixie and Whistling in Brooklyn.
Whistling at Girls.
And Bob Hope did that in the Ghost Breakers.
Let's see. He was in The Mark of Zorro? Really? Okay.
He was the Mark. He was the Mark.
Was he? Whispering Ghosts, 1942.
Okay.
That's the name of it.
I had no idea.
And very atmospheric, a little ghosty. I think there might be a ghost in there. It was very good.
Might be.
Uncle Milty, how about that?
Yeah. And one of the greats in this was Willie Best as Euclid Brown was absolutely hilarious. He was very much on par with Mortan. I can't think.
Mantan Marlowe. You're thinking of Mantan Marlowe.
Mantan Marlowe. Yeah, thank you. Yes, very much. He was the comedy in this, and he was hilarious. If you haven't seen it, Whispering Ghost 1942, see it if you can. If not, maybe I'll have to show it again on Horrible Heart.
There you go.
I'm sorry for my voice.
No apologies needed.
Well, it's not pleasant listening to people that have a bad voice.
I kind of like it.
There you now.
Married.
All right.
Oh, shit.
Does it? Well, you look at it like this, you know your voice sounds better than mine. So there you go. That's always fun. You can go, well, at least I'm not in that guy's pants, shoes, whatever.
Yeah.
Brought it back.
I thought I could take any kind of voice, but then there was Yoko Ono.
Oh, Lord.
Has there been another that's as bad as Yoko?
Sorry,
Yoko, but...
How about the one, the girls that sing It's Halloween?
Oh, no, we like them. We like them. Those are good. No, that's really bad good. Yoko,
sure.
bad. That, bad good.
Yoko bad. Yoko bad.
We are Halloween good. Bad good. Bad good, yeah. Never heard John Carradine sing, but I don't know that I want to.
No, yeah, that might not go over so good. I'll bet he did. At
so
one point,
stuff.
I'll bet he did. I just have this feeling.
In the 1990s, I was still in Orlando. I had a book. It was a biography of David Carradine, John Carradine's son, and he spoke at length about all the stuff that his father did. And I was like, wow, this guy did so much stuff. He was doing a lot of stuff.
He burst into the old hermit's cabin in Bride of Frankenstein. He was one of the hunters that came in and ruined it for the blind man and the Frankenstein monster in Bride.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That was him in there. He popped up for me recently somewhere in a really old flick. He was really young, and it surprised the heck out of me, and I can't remember for the life of me what it was.
1978, he was in a movie called, excuse me, censors, Vampire Hookers. What the heck was that? Vampire Hookers.
Yeah, towards the end of his career, he was getting into doing some, like, naughtier movies. And that was one of them.
Vampire Hookers. I've never seen that film, but now I want to.
Yeah, I wouldn't trip over myself to go and see it.
No,
but,
no, it's not going to be good. So, yeah, I'm scrolling through here. He was in a film where he was a ship's captain. I can't think of her name. He was a ship's captain. He took these people out on a cruise, and it's not Gilligan's Island, but something happened, and they ended up on an island, and it was populated by German Nazi zombies.
Okay.
And
There's been a couple of those on TV, too.
Yeah, you know, and he died early off. He was in The Invisible Man. Okay. He was in The Black Cat. Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah. Prisoner of Shark Island. White Fang. Wow, he was in so much stuff.
Yeah. And you could tell he had theater, you know what I mean? And
he projected well his
gestures, you could tell he's been on stage. Yep.
Yeah, this
and then his
like
hand
a
got
19...
messed up as he got older. He had some kind of arthritic problem with his hands. I don't know if you noticed in some of his later films.
And there was somebody in horror that had it too. It's an arthritic problem. And you go, wow, what happened to that guy?
Yeah. It can be very crippling, depending on what kind of arthritis you get. It can be very crippling.
Yeah.
See all the things we've got to look forward to, guys? We're aging, we're sick, we're a mess, but we're going to keep doing radio, I hope.
Yeah, you know, when the office woman at the doctor's office knows you by first name, you've hit the stride. Yeah.
Time to get a new doctor.
We have officially attained old.
Oh my gosh, this is like one of my favorite films. I saw it on TV and it disturbed me, so it became one of my favorites. And
which one is that?
I'm searching for it now on the Internet Movie Database. Horror of the Blood Monsters. No, Crowhaven. He was in Crowhaven Farm. That was another one that disturbed me. That became a fave. Wow. Can't find it. I will find it and email it to you or something. And
All right.
It was in the 70s. I want to say I saw it on TV. Something about German Nazi zombies.
I don't know. I think Rob Zombie does a couple naughty versions of those.
Yeah.
And
it starred from Hammer Movies, the Van Helsing character, actor. Can't remember his name. Crowhaven Farm. Horror of the Blood Monsters. No. Oh, this is beating me up that I can't find this Land of the Giant. He was in Land of the Giant. I remember that. It was in Blood of Dracula's Castle, 1969. It wasn't the Astro Zombies. It wasn't that.
Yeah, he was in Astro Zombies, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Oh, gosh, he was in Hillbillies in a Haunted House. That
was
he
really? Oh, good heavens.
It's the only film I've never been able to go the distance for. I had to cut it off. I was watching it, and then they went to the Grand Ole Opry, and I was like, I can't do it, guys. I'm sorry. And I cut it off. And people were like, what? And I was like, it doesn't get better, I promise. If you thought it was getting better, it's not getting better. It was hideous. Yeah. And, man, okay. Well, I'm going to have to go beat up the internet because I can't see it right offhand. But there's a TV. I thought it was made for TV, but maybe it hit theaters. But there's one where he's a ship's captain, takes a group of people to an island, and it's inhabited by a German, and he controls German zombies And they kill everybody.
You ready for this? We have lived to see 1/8 of 88. We have actually, we lived to see 6/6 of 66, 7/7 of 77, 8/8 of 88, 9/9 of 99, October 10th of 2010, November 11th of 2011, December 12th of 2012, February 2nd of 22, and December 31st of 23. That's 1/2/3, 1/2/3, by the way. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That, the
that's kind of weird.
Date. Yeah. Yeah, we have... I missed the assassination. I didn't really miss it. I wouldn't want to really, you know, it was a rough time. I missed the assassination of the president of the U.S., Kennedy. We've only had two of those, right?
Two of what?
Okay, Lincoln? Assassinations of U.S. presidents.
Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, Kennedy.
Yep.
There's four of them.
We've had four.
Lincoln, McKinley, Garfield, and actually be Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, Kennedy.
Yep. And there's been attempts on others.
There have been
others.
Attempts on others, yeah.
Reagan, wasn't Roosevelt that?
No. Reagan didn't get it. Reagan got shot, but yeah.
The attempt. Yeah, that was an attempt.
That was an attempt.
Right.
Yeah,
Squeaky Fromm on Gerald Ford.
Yes.
She shot Gerald Ford.
That was an attempt. Oh, these zealous attempters. What's going on with them?
I don't know.
This is maddening that I can't find. Most of the time I can find a title. I'm going to say it's due to malady that I can't understand stuff right now. Terror in the Wax Museum? What? He was Claude Dupree.
Yes.
But I cannot find this darn thing. And like I said, it was one of these things. I saw it when I was very young on TV, and it disturbed me, and I was like, ooh, I like this. It's just kind of weird, but okay.
Well, Keeds.
We should get Gar out, and I'm sure you got to Timmy to get fish out of the well there. So with no further ado.
Timmy
no
didn't fall
ado,
in the well. He was pushed.
Yeah.
What?
Probably by Lassie.
Yeah. By Lassie, yes. Lassie was an attention hound, and that's what happened.
Yep.
So with no further ado, let's turn off the house lights. Turn on the three spotlights so into the middle spotlight can come. The one, the only, James Durante.
There we go. Good night, boys. See ya. Boy.
Good night.
It's time to say
good TTFN.
Good night. Good night. What for this sake? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo!
Toodles.
And tinka-tinka-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I just saw her in the West Point Market. That's why I saw her.
Yeah.